a good man to have around. And at times when he starts to row, I don't care if I live, but he knows how to make me forgive him. Bought a revolver, I don't mean for fun. I ought to shoot him for things that he's done, but I can't pull the trigger. Some of a gun is a good man to have around.
CIOI 101.5 FM.
The Hawk is on the air.
So we're bound to break through the stratus
with these rhymes and a classic.
Forget the fads or the fashion. Statements I make on the microphone.
Hey, yo, world domination, the base of the foundation. No time wasted.
Firewalk, we trailblazing.
Burn to the next destination. Flexing on this world exploration. Teamed with the best in the nation.
Yes, and who that be?
Custom design, fine rhymes into salary. All the way from T-Dot to the Van City All-Star. Rude boys freak you like a fantasy.
Word up.
Yes, yes. From the Northwest, Van City. Oh, design. Boy. I like chilling. Monday night, Raw watching. Yeah. Me and Danny O at the Sky Dome. When it's in town, my peoples know I just be regular. So haters start dissing. But steady, reciting my lyrics up with my in their mouth. They swallowing. Talking about they need some oxygen. People need to know. Shot clear. They're moving no slow mo. Into women like a Gano. Carlo. dollars in fists now. How you gonna feel when you see the six triple low wheels start to peel? Swap dog appeal, y'all know the deal. If you don't, ask my man why dog. He'll tell you the circle, ride the spot.
T-Dot
represents like my Northwest connects rascals that make the cash flows indeed. Yo, I down the ghost like a big C puff the shot clear with the mouth colorful like the currency.
We notorious, ain't nobody can bang with us. Rascals checkmate, cardinal and thrust. Shot clear coming down with that northern touch. Why you people wanna bang with us? Ain't nobody can hang with us. Rascals checkmate, cardinal and thrust. Shot clear coming down with that northern touch.
Yeah, I'm running with these villainous cats, sir. Fly to die, bruh, kicking at all about rapture. You heard a killer cats like this. Smooth dominating session. Like hoes get bucks, so when I'm flexing. Dillinger, running up on ya. So what you thinking? I got rhymes like politicians, steady politicking. Stick and move, I don't age, yo, I ain't fool. Then maximize my time like we fighting in the spotlight. Aight then, who wanna battle? You must be tripping. Whack niggas should be served an ass whipping. We fortify and get live with five niggas, then expand cross season overland. Got people in Jamaica, Trini in London, Australia. I bring the soul to the front like Mahalia. Curb style, we'll make a nigga buck wild. Cold flipping set trip, then I dip, and that's it.
North Stars, you know who we are. Notorious superstar. Yeah. Just to see you smile and enjoy yourself. I know you up in here to release your death. Some frontin' with the loot while others got the wealth.
Where are you?
I'm in the VI, undetected like a stealth. Girl, you out of shape, simply you out of figure. Can I zoom, zoom, lick a shot, you pull the trigger. Club scene, honey, I'll show you something much bigger. When it's said and done, you'll be like, ooh, that's my nigga. Started from scratch, a baby blue eye figure. She's a gold digger, on to heel figure. Got you, she wanna swigger. We have an answer for them, cause we them much bigger. Thrust, a maker of a style that you wanna represent. Present, in other words, I pay the rent. From the past to the present and the future. Whatever suits you, it's all the same. This kid's got game.
We ain't notorious, huh? Ain't nobody can bang with us. Rascals, checkmate, cardinal and thrust. Shot clear coming down with the northern touch. Yo, why you people wanna bang with us? Ain't nobody can hang with us. Checkmate, cardinal and thrust. Shot clear coming down with the northern touch.
The northern touch, baby. Yeah.
Saturday, you're listening to Speak On It, brought to you by the Black Poet Residency and the Hamilton Youth Poets. Every week, we talk to a number of young people from the Hamilton region. These individuals are artists of various kinds. We talk about politics, race, music, anything that we feel compelled to speak about or to speak on it. Once in a while, we showcase our Poetry Slam, which happens on the third Sunday of every month at the Spice Factory. This last slam featured a number of poets. The Poetry Slam is a competition of spoken word poetry. Five random judges judge the poems from a score of 0 to 10. For this recording, we didn't play the scores because, as we say in the Poetry Slam, the points are not the point. The poetry is the point. The poems that you may hear might trigger you in various ways, might make you feel certain emotions or make you think a bit harder than you wanted to at this particular moment. As always, listener discretion is advised, and we would be happy to hear back from you at any time. So just look us up, the Hamilton Youth Poets. Up next is the previous slam that we had. We apologize for the audio. We were having a little bit of technical issues, but we hope you can still enjoy. This is Speak On It, brought to you by the Black Poet Residency and the Hamilton Youth Poets.
This territory is covered by the Upper Canada Treaties, is within the lands protected by the Dish With One Spoon Wampum Agreement, and is directly adjacent to Haldimand Treaty Territory. Without these treaties, Hype would not have the opportunity of being here today. So it is with gratitude and humility that we honor and respect this privilege. Snaps for that. Let's go. All right. First up to the open mic, can we have Jen to the stage? All the way to the stage.
Hello, I'm Jen, and I've never been here before. My poem is called The Hot Girl. When I was young and skinny, they say, the boys chased me. I made mistakes. No one saw the real me. Now I'm older and wiser, they say, and I've learned that being truly seen is more important. I have learned this too. I was not the hot girl. I was the, no, not you, girl. Fat and crooked teeth, and so painfully aware of my ugly ducklingness that I hid myself away too. I hid in being fat while fighting against myself for being fat. I never got to be the young, hot, skinny woman that all the boys wanted to. I was standing next to her, and they would all still put me anyway. Nobody sees anybody when all you look for are magazine ads and celebrity abs. We are robbed of knowing the beauty we fall for before we ever get the chance to see the eyes, to see with the eyes our mothers gave us. I never got to be young and pretty. I was young and scared and hard and angry and cynical at 13 instead, knuckling my fists against my mouth, trying to push my teeth to the way they are supposed to be, too hurt and wounded by my family implosion, the weight of all that responsibility, a millstone crushing me to the finest powder. I wasn't young and skinny and pretty. I was diamond dust. I'm still not skinny and certainly less young and rapidly discarding the notion of pretty because beauty is what you are full of. I learned to laugh out loud when I was 23 because I liked the way a girl in my college class laughed. It sounded like my own laugh from when I was a kid before I knew that women could hide in whatever body they chose to wear. And I decided then that I would just laugh, mouth open, head back, loud sound rolling out between my bared teeth for anyone who looked to see down my throat to find what kind of beauty I was full of. We were led to believe that we would be safe one way or another if we bent our bodies to the shape of our fear, if we contained ourselves carefully in structures designed to control the people around us. Pretty or ugly, both meant a certain kind of power and certain kind of safety, and neither worked anyway. We all got raped, used, discarded, or we manipulated and used and abused those boys, equally terrified of the soft rawness inside them. We all got conned, and still we hedge our bets and show up at the table full battle regalia on, fat or thin, plain or decked, calculating just how wide our smiles should be, how deep in our throats we will let them see. I was never young and skinny and pretty. There are no young, skinny, pretty children to legitimize my body as it is. But there is a strong and wise and full of beauty person inside and outside of me. I still have a shy smile. Those teeth are still crooked and mine. But I will laugh wide and loud and deep, breasts and belly bouncing because she won that gift back. I still hide a bit sometimes, but much less so, and I still show up at the table. But I have learned how the game is rigged, and my laugh will cover everything and all that I am full of. Thank you.
I can't tell if this is an S or a J, so I'm going to throw my first bet. It's Sean Marley to the stage. Woo!
Check. Can you hear that? Good. Okay. First night here also. I'm with Jen and another friend. Checking it out. Thanks for letting us come here, and thanks for listening. Okay, I don't have a title for this one. Here we go. It's not all about tiaras and dresses for princess. It's about loss in the Sahara of her self-acceptance. When will her drought end in a trillion grains of sand? As her life she contends, sifts through her hands. Says she knows she's not young, skinny, and pretty. Does she know she's got an inner beauty? She used to put up walls and tear them down, then rebuild them up tall when no one's around. Now she's trying real hard, a real work in progress. She's an insightful bard, but don't let her digress. There's a crack in her cloud where thin sunshine trickles in, and Jeff Buckley soothes her with a heavenly hymn. And if she serves you delicious butterfly soup, don't let her stew while you lap up that goop. Her life's a trip when she cycles and loves. Her soul bare and stripped, it can't give enough. So she wrestles with her truths. What if I fail, even worse, succeed? Her inadequacies of youth will no longer impede. Her boundaries are meant to be respected, with her consent not be contested. Crumbs used to be her cordon bleu. Now it's, do you deserve ugly ducky, not does Princess Erdi deserve you. So smile, werewolf princess, show off those tracks. Your train's miles in the distance, so don't look back.
I really could be a drill sergeant one day. That's crazy. All right, please welcome our next open micer to the stage, Cassidy! All the warm love! We're out for Cassidy! Woo! Okay, I'm good off.
Hello. Okay, so I'm Cassie, or Cassidy, whichever you guys prefer. The name of my poem is The Sun and the Satellite, so I hope you guys enjoy. I once wanted to feel like a star, shining ever so bright, luminous and held together by its own strength, comforted by its motherly sun. I want one day for others to look up to me the way I admire you. I know I will need to travel far to get to you, but I will keep traveling. I will continue to orbit. I will resist gravity's pull until I am reunited with my star. For now, I'll settle for the burning heat off another. That is all I can do, because looking from Earth, I am no longer reachable. Some say I am just in a black hole, but I think I'm just lost at this point. I don't know who I am or who I was. I guess I need to sort it out. I need to fix the fray off the stitched smile I have made, because people like me aren't allowed to frown. Here I am, reaching out, trying to confess, hoping to clean up this mess. Maybe you can help me put back the puzzle. All I want is to feel whole again, but I don't remember what that feels like, because I've been floating in space for an eternity, surrounded by corrosive thoughts, impacting my brain. I think I'm finally going completely insane. Maybe it's best you leave and return to your planet, because I am beyond repair. My home is no longer in sight, and my star was never meant to be mine. I am a satellite floating along, trying to belong, but I am still just a foreign object. Maybe you were right. I feel so out of place. Maybe you should hit me again by your meteorite so you could just finally erase me, because I'm losing the fight, and someone should do something before I expel myself. But I'm nothing but a box on the shelf. Can't you tell that I'm drowning here, that I don't belong? Can't you read past my smiled complexion that I'm a hardened soul and looking for redemption and freedom and love? But I'll let you get back to your sun, and I'll get back to my satellite, and I'll continue to float until my debris hits somebody else. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. All right, next up to stage, we got the one and only Dr. G. All right, can you please give it up a warm welcome applause to Dr. G?
So this has a bit of audience participation. When I point at you guys, can you say plastic? So let's try it out.
Plastic.
Okay. The title of this poem is...
Plastic.
The girl at the checkout said, do you want a bag? It'll cost you 10 cents. It's for the environment. No? So, I go home to open what I paid for. I unravel a tight layer of shrink-wrapped
plastic
to get to the box, cardboard coated in shiny
plastic.
As I cut through the thick packaging tape made of
plastic,
I view the product through a little window of
plastic.
The box is open. I pull out my item, encased in a clear coffin of
plastic.
Cutting through the coffin breaks the handles of my scissors, because they are made of
plastic.
To my relief, I finally see... Wait, what do I see? The item is free. The thing is tied to more shiny cardboard coated in
plastic.
I stab my finger on the twist ties, essentially wires covered in
plastic.
Attached to the back of the plastic coated cardboard, the plastic coated twist ties are tied, twisted, and tagged down with plastic tape to black tabs forged from non-recyclable
plastic.
Fantastic. The intractability of the packaging has culminated in a snapped product. Fragments fall to the floor. No more! I am not going back to that store that thinks they have won the war against
plastic
by making me pay for a bag.
Yeah. Brianne. Yes, go bring it up, come on. You got this, don't worry.
It's my first time, so if I don't say words, you know, words, yeah? Yeah? Okay, so this one's called Glass Sphere. In a house, does everything have a place, or is it simply misplaced? In a world so undeserving, a world so hateful. You are trapped in a house, and houses swallowed the key. Sorry. And the world swallowed the key. You are simply trapped inside the house that is found within yourself, unable to live in a house with all of her thoughts trapped inside. She tried to run away, but they found her. No one to hear or be heard, as if in a snow globe, trapped in a glass sphere, unable to release herself, trapped inside.
All right, next up to the stage. Forgive me if I mispronounce your name. Zainab. All right, please welcome Zainab to the stage. A big, loud round of applause. We got no cold in this room. No cold. Come on. All right.
Hi, everyone. My name is Zainab. It's my first time. This one is called You Are Worthy. It's these eyes, the eyes of my father, it's two strangers, whose eyes are imprinted into mine, irises the same color as the sherbet sky, pupils holding the pain in the distance of the howl of a lone wolf, the color of the ocean floor, and yet the scaffolding their skin is seems to me to form seams in the skies, painting scenes from the heavens, the sound of meaning. With hints of hope like the faint brushes of blazing orange just as the sun goes down. Words escape me as I strain to string together similes that could stitch even a syllable of those moments in the sky. My limbs crave their intimacy, they circulate in my blood like oxygen to my cells, reminding me of the journey that it is not in the pain, that it is not despite everything, but because of it. Gary. He was the first patient I ever visited. He looked up at me and said, "It is what it is," and he smiles. Me, with my baby self, Bambi-eyed, keen to learn, dreams fresh on my sleeve. Him, with his warm, aged eyes, crinkled with smile lines that reminded me of my father's, a deep brown, took me to ancestors I hadn't yet met. It's this moment that replays in my mind, his laugh. A deep, throaty chuckle that lightened an atmosphere scaled with so much loss, but it managed to hold a weight I can still hold. Dead weight now, no longer in his control, I readjusted his legs for him in a feeble attempt to bring him some comfort, and he yelped in pain. And as my life flashed before my eyes, I heard him laugh. He'd been playing me. And he laughed even harder when he saw the panic in my eyes, and just like that, my conversation with him was lighter and more the color of the sun than the conversations I had been having with myself in my head those days. As he recounted his story briefly for me, he skipped over the gory details of his early onset of MS, how all he could do was watch as he lost almost all motor function control. He washed over his divorce, his shift from a job he loved to his now 2-year stay in the hospital, because he'd been over his story enough. He lived it. Now, he said, he embraced life as it was. As I looked around his room, I saw his daughter's love painted for him on the walls, for him in pictures and little "I love you, Dad" notes. He spoke of failure and loss, And to my surprise, with his double-digit A's, he didn't carry the same weight of those loaded words as I did, simply referred to them as literary allusions. I've never failed at anything. Listen, I never failed at anything. Anything I wanted, I got. I tried, and I got. Anything I wanted, I got. I just got, and then I got MS. And he burst out in his familiar laughter as painting the ceiling into the heavens. My confusion at his glee and humor must have been apparent because he explained, I could have no legs, I could be dead, I could be somewhere without access to all this beauty, but I was still confused. And my throat tightened and my eyes welled up with tears as I watched the crinkles around his eyes form with a smile. They were caverns. Entire journeys that he had traveled, this was strength I had not seen. His eyes were a sea, they were a poetry I couldn't hold. My thoughts were loud, as if thumping themselves against my head, and slow and deliberate, my privilege and ableness spoke louder, and so too did the meaning I had forgotten. His eyes held my hands, and they helped my heart beat the living parts out of me. I was at a loss for words. My voice came out meek. You are incredibly strong, was all I could muster in the brief silence after his quiet laughter. It is what it is, he said, and he smiled. His smile was relief. I had forgotten the feel of water on my face after a long hot day, refreshing and cool against a skin that taut itself into a tautness that was enough to give birth to bruises for free. His smile was calmness, as if I had never seen this feeling before. I felt like a child just seeing something for the first time, wanting to hold it in my hands, put it in my mouth, and taste it like ice after a desert day. And ever since, my skin has been longing it, my shoulders now knowing they don't need to hold on so heavy, so tense. They urge me to try a new kind of life, a life we were made for, a life that was made for us. And so, because I wondered where he got all of this certainty with all the desperation he spoke with. He said he literally clung to it for so long, his gasps came out in crescendos, lyrically pulling me in. Of course, this would be his response to my question, what keeps you going? Why not keep going? I'm not hopeless, he said, looking up at the ceiling as if speaking it to the heavens. And if I could pen for you into black and white the lives he had seen, it would create the phenomenon of imagery in itself, because nobody had the tone he did. His vulnerability was his embrace, a Shakespearean tragedy that felt more like a victory with his smile. You're not hopeless, I echoed back to him. I echoed back to him, this time waiting for him to return my gaze, looking directly into his eyes, trying to pour everything he gave me back to him, you're not. And I realized in that moment, I was also saying it to myself. Thank you.
All right. A big applause for Serenity. Yeah!
Have you ever dated an artist? Let me tell you what it's like. We're painted with insecurities. Be careful or we'll run. I'm sorry if I confuse you, but I'm an artist. It's in my nature. My sky is bare and open for you to see, oozing with dead color. We play games and win in our heads, but lose in a sense every time we try and play with someone in real life. Being an artist is not easy for us. We paint circles around your confusion as if it will protect us from you asking questions as to what we are, as if we're a different species, something to be afraid of. So we tiptoe around you normal people, scared to get tripped over and caught under broad daylight, as if it will burn a facade of unique. It can be a cage sometimes. Artist block, lack of inspiration, lack of acceptance. Artist, a word you know, a word people fear, a word people love. I'm amused, to say the least, being cut from my hidings, bare for everyone to see. Everyone says that it will be great for us artists, a new flavor of color to interpret into our arts. You ask me a question I cannot answer, not now nor ever. Your question is different, clean, neat, tidy, it's distasteful. A sour bitter in my mouth, saying it's like a curse I've heard but told never to say. What's the point? I am unsure whether I should thank you or curse you for bringing that to my attention, that I'm different and that's a horrible thing to be. Dating an artist is like wandering through a maze with no entry or exit. The definition of artist, seeing unhealthy wounds wrapped in bandages, repainted to be beautiful, disguised for everyone to see. Have you found your answer as to what we are? No. Great, because there isn't one. I'm guessing it wasn't a rhetorical question. I crack under pressure, identical to one of a sculpture. I scare myself into artworks, using creativity as an invisible shield to protect myself with, to shield myself from the danger of one of a thousand eyes. You may never see the artist, only her works. They supposedly speak for themselves. Have you ever dated an artist? I'm not an easy question, especially since no one ever asked it. I'm still waiting for an answer that I don't even know. We're exhausted from running from our truths, but you're the top athlete. Have you ever dated an artist? We're not completely stable. Is that a problem? An artist is one of the most fragile things in the world. Is that a problem for you? We haven't scared you off yet with our uncertainty. They say that artists abandon their works because they lost interest. I say I abandoned my work because I was afraid to see the truth that I painted into them, unaware of the pain I put into it. Blood, sweat, and tears say more than any of my pieces ever could. Yes, that's what they tell me. I'm an artist who's afraid to get their hands dirty. Dating an artist who's confused by laughter without the well-known feeling of pain that came before and after. As you try to show us light, we know is there, but are too shy to say and scared to say a simple hello. I wrinkle my nose in distaste. Artist. A picture where art supplies are split everywhere, staining perfectly white canvases. What is the point of dating an artist compared to the perfect picture we paint after? Why would you want to get involved with the before shot? It's not pretty as you would imagine. The knowledge of supposedly being chosen by something other than ability to paint scenes onto paper, staining it with a personality, is bizarre to me. Honestly, have you ever dated an artist? We're crazy, don't you love it?
Okay. All right. When I was young, I didn't know what love was, and I didn't care. I was more worried about who to play tag with at school, where the best trees were to hide away from the heat, and how to trick my mom into believing I'd eaten all my lunch that day. I made some vague promise to the boys I ran around with I would marry them one day, until, of course, I realized some of them thought I was actually going to marry them. So I ran away from them for good. When I first felt it, the tug of something called a crush, my body became a stranger to me, a force of nature, leaving me confused and annoyed. I cursed at my cheeks for turning ladybug red, and my fingers for becoming as fragile as raindrops on leaves, shaking at the strangest of moments when I was near. The first hymn was a whirlwind, a striking drama worthy of soap opera adaptation, starring a 10-year-old. As I swooned every time you said hi to me in the hallways, panicked over how many times I said hi back, over and over, and wondered if he would be my beloved, if it was fate, because he once sat next to me during a math class. Then he got a haircut. And that was the end of my whirlwind romance. The first her was unexpected, a question I didn't have the answer to in a storm I couldn't predict, so instead I tried to hide that thunder in my heart, waiting for my feelings to go away, and they almost did. Almost. Loving both is realizing you don't quite fit right in the label of gay or straight, or the time when you are young and hear mixed messages between loving parents and troubled children, the unspoken rule of liking boys only. That you can laugh all you like with your friends about crushing on male classmates at a sleepover, but the moment there is mention of longer hair or feminine voice, the room goes silent. Loving both is admitting to yourself you can't seem to make a choice, but never accepting it as second nature, ending with the refrain of, I'm not gay! I have been lucky enough not to experience outright rejection for loving girls, but I've seen how it might look through whispers and dirty looks and so-called friends calling me weird, so of course I repress and forget because it seems better than being cast out of social circles. Until you finally meet her. She is beautiful. Everything you could wish for and more. And though you are only friends, you realize the storm in your chest, the dark clouds in your head were signs of how happy you would be when she kissed you through her fingers and the sun rose into your smile. You can't repress it anymore. Instead, loving both is finally embracing it, realizing you were built to love women dancing in flowing dresses just as much as men with messy hair and smiles as sweet as honey. As I grow older, I hope I love boldly, in spite of others objecting. I hope my love is passionate and gentle to all those who love me. I hope I can use whatever pronouns I wish to in my poetry and never have to explain it. Finally, I hope I can live happily in sin with her or him and know that love is and always will be second nature to me.
Slammer of the night, can you please welcome Shad to the stage? Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yes. All the way to the stage.
It's all about the money, money, money. Give me all your money, money, money. We don't give a damn about world change. Just pay attention to the price tags. What do you value most in life? Is it that money, that green? Is that why you run reds? So you can not be late to that job that makes you that green? That's why hoopers, they practice their jump shot so they release is green. So they can get to the league just to make them some green. But do you really value this money? Some men marvel at the mention of a mill. Other men marvel at the mention of a meal. And still, you're wearing $2,000 shoes that, let's face it, aren't that nice. But they're Yeezys or Gucci or Louis. Champion used to be in Walmart. Don't forget that. But now that it's up, you riding with no hands. I can't respect the fact that you spent half your paycheck on a jacket. It's clear to me that some of y'all were taught that money makes the man. My father taught me that the man makes the money. I mean, take it in. Trump is a billionaire, allegedly. That doesn't make him any more of a man than you or me. Money gives you power, but what good is power without respect? Y'all slandered Kylie for only donating $1 million to help Australia, saying it's the same as someone making $100,000 donating $100. Is it really that much? $1 million is $1 million no matter how you slice it. Who really is donating? And I don't even keep up with Kardashians like that. The more we value money, the more it controls us. Those who value money tend to be more jealous, wanting what other people have, not appreciating what's in front of them. They're the type of people that will let their food go cold watching somebody else eat. It's all about the money, money, money. Give me all your money, money, money. We don't give a damn about world change. Just pay attention to the price tag. Thank you.
Next up, you got Yusuf to the stage. Let's go, Yusuf. Let's go, let's go, let's go.
This is the first poem I ever wrote back in December. Yeah. Okay. When I was a kid, I always wanted to be an astronaut. I always dreamed of drifting in the beauty of space, twist and turn, unable to tell up from down, left from right, looking at the beautiful stars and galaxies as they twinkle like small candles in the backdrop of wonder. Like, that was just a dream, a fantasy. Little did I know that this illusion would be morphed into my worst nightmare. As I grew, my small planet developed into a slew of beautiful worlds, mighty forests, beautiful oases, sandy beaches, crystal caverns, towering cities, gargantuan mountains, and best of all, a sky full of beautiful stars, who shined their warm love on me. Everything seemed beautiful and perfect about my world, but it takes only one small thing, an itch, a blip, a slip, a misstep, a nail, a crack, a thought. When life goes knocking you off your feet, shoving you into a shuttle, flying at speeds that make you sick and nauseous and dizzy, throwing my stomach to the floor. What's happening? What's going on? The shuttle's out of control. Suddenly, hundreds of miles up, I'm ejected into a black void of oblivion, suffocating at my own dreadful dreams as I gasp for air that isn't there, screaming, hello, 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 anyone help? But nothing comes out. But it'll be okay, right? I've been here before. Just gotta get back to the ship. Safely adjust. Get back home just like usual. The stars will guide me. But this time was different. One by one, flicker by flicker, All my stars, stars who I thought would warm me in my wonderful planet, started to go out. Some, like fingers pressing on a candle tip, abandoning me as if they turned to dead black dwarfs long ago, with the final light reaching me in my time of need. Others, like violent supernovas that bathe me and my planet in deadly cosmic rays, killing all near and dear to me. Without your warmth and love, my wonderful world is shrouded in gloom and doom. My heart collapsed in on itself, passing the point of no return and transforming into a makeshift black hole, sucking in any fields of emotion and connection, devouring it into nothing, weighing what feels like the eternal universe, emitting nothing, showing no signs of life. I got my dream. I twisted and turned, not in awe, but in fear. I couldn't tell what was up and down, what was left and right, when I needed direction the most. With nothing but dread and hate as I stared into the backdrop of oblivion and hopelessness. All I needed was one. One small, impossible star. A white hole. To give me enough light to find my way back to the ship so I can land back on my dark planet. But physics says white holes are impossible. Then I notice in the black void one last light. One last star, my one true impossible white hole, dimly shining. Please, 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 help me, help me. I can finally get out. Finally, I can go home. I can finally go back to my mess of a world. Finally, finally, I love you. Oh, false alarm. White holes are just that, impossible. But still, I'll dream. I'll dream of someone I can grab onto to fill the wickedness inside me and steer this wild ship back for a soft landing. And if I ever find you, my impossible one, trapped in the same null, no stars, no light, just nothing, I vow I'll do anything to be your white hole, your impossibility, to be the blink in your night that won't burn out like a candle, to grab and guide you back to your ship, no need to reach. To be the North Star that brings you safely back down to Earth. And maybe you'll bring it back down to my world, too.
The poetry. Okay, next up to the stage, we have Brianne. Yeah, get up for Brianne. Get up to Brianne.
It falls to gray. I turn to clay. You cannot stay. I'm holding on by a thread here. I wish I had more to grip. I'm slipping away, falling into a slumber. I return every spring.
All right, next up to the stage, we have Kriti. Kriti up to the stage. Okay.
One. I never knew of the presence of my heartbeat until the eighth grade, when I saw her for the first time sitting through math class. I dreamt of a different kind of friendship, one where we could hold hands in the field at recess and laugh together in moments alone. I wanted moments alone with you. Two, some days I'll shiver randomly and I'll know another kid was just shoved further into the closet. I have walked through the Vatican and I can hear whispers of old men, some dead, some alive, screaming sinner. Back home, another girl will have been kicked out of her village the same morning she wakes up next to her love. Three, spite. Tell me I can't go and I'll find a way to get there. Four, I've danced for the first time. For the first time, my feet have left the ground and I've found the people who would catch me. For the first time, I'm surrounded by nothing but love, laughter, happiness, and dancing. Five. For every brown girl that was told that she was only meant for Raj and Simran was just some distant option. For every immigrant that was told just to pick a goddamn struggle. I am here to show that we don't exist in just some category of minority. Six. Affirmations that my sexuality exists outside of porn. Seven. For the people that should have been there but weren't. I see you. I want to spread my sight through the city. Eight. I've gotten to taste the rainbow, and by God, she's delicious! Briefly, I'm allowed to exist entirely in color. Every shade of pink, purple, and blue stands out. My world is painted in full saturation. Nine. I'm always there. I don't think there's ever a moment I couldn't be there. I carry my pride with me for every waking moment. I want to be with the people that carry it too.
Okay, Okay, next up to the stage, we have Thunderclaw Robinson.
I am hovering somewhere between the way the world wants me to speak and the accent my parents never wanted me to have. I guess that's why I still stutter on the simplest words. I don't know what I'm supposed to sound like. Pieces of my past puzzle picture practically pixelated. It doesn't sound right. My voice gets hit with an accent tax within its own body. Can someone please tell me what home feels like? I have my mother's mouth, but not my mother's intonation. I have my father's music sense, but not his yard-grown education. And I always wonder if that will be enough. I already know I don't need to be my parents. The point is to be a better fusion of the gems that crystallized over my conception. Cognitively, I'm cognitive of what I'm composed of, but my roar still fares foreigner to me and this family of lions. I feel like it's a pride that I could never have. The fluidity of fighting phonetics was lost on me because I wasn't licked and groomed by my mother's tongue. My parents opted to hide their voice in this strange new world in hopes that a predator mightier than they wouldn't be clued into their identity. And for me, they wanted the same, but I hadn't found mine yet. It hadn't entered my soul. Never near enough to smell, but near enough to ingest, and only ever around long enough to hear the pounding drum heartbeats of my warrior ancestors. At home, we are loud, allowed to be loud, and listen to what we are heard. All ears are pricked and tuned into the environment. Everyone understands what you were saying. There's no shaming in language playing, code switching masters, and it sounds like freedom. Oh, how I wish my parents still spoke their dark, rich accent. That they didn't sacrifice who they were to be who they are. I feel like assimilation doesn't have to be a survival tactic. What kind of environment would make a lion have to hide their shame in the shade of another dialect? I can understand it. I couldn't reiterate a sentence to you without showing you where I come from, because where I come from, I mean, where my family's footsteps lead back to, they were all too aware. The hiding one's true voice was a means of survival. At least this far away from home.
Next up to the stage, we have the one and only Caitlin. Caitlin Tolk to the stage.
Some people don't like trigger warnings, but I do, so here's that. Do what you need to do. My doctor says that bruises are caused by blunt force to the capillaries. He explains that my anemia is a river run dry. I bruise much easier than most. Bruising is my body's way of responding to pressure, that each bruise is a memory of a trauma. The first time I hear from my abuser after the assault, it is watching a corpse resurrect itself. His mouth is all alarms and red flags as he stands on stage at a poetry slam and in front of me and 100 other people says that I helped him find God. He leads a predatory prayer. This stage, a confessional, his voice echoes in this cathedral as he seeks absolution for his sin, a choir to rumble in forgiveness, and I imagine that God wouldn't be too happy with this. That his pride is more seventh deadly sin than changed man. Meanwhile, the only thing that I am praying for are the bruises he left behind to heal, but they linger like phantom hands grazing my skin, my thighs. Paint all of the colors of nightshade. Violent violets and ultramarines, my flesh, are leaves in the fall, all soft yellows and wilting browns. It has been almost exactly 2 weeks since. I touch a cigarette for the first time in years. I bruise my lungs with smoke, bruise my heart with carcinogens, bruise my breath with tobacco. I kill every part of me from the inside out and pray that they know how to heal. I stand in front of the mirror. My body is a mausoleum of trauma. It is like the glass is taunting me, and I am tired of reflecting all of the soft parts of myself. So I bury every mirror in my house to the basement. This is the only way I know how to heal. I start looking for the God that I helped him find in every fingerprint that stains my skin for months. This one, he didn't mean to leave. This one means he loves me. This one, he blames himself. This one, he blames everyone else. I am still learning to love this skin. Still hoping to make peace with phantom hands, and there is nothing beautiful about this tragedy. Nothing poetic about this pain, but I caught my reflection in the mirror yesterday and greeted her like an old friend instead of a stranger.
Let's go, Abdul. Come on, raise it, raise it, raise it for Abdul. Come on.
You've got mail. Dear future me, let my troubles now be a distant memory that you laugh about. Let my pain of loss be a time of learning. Did I find myself when I'm lost in my thoughts? Have I gained a new understanding of life that I didn't before? How much did I change? Do I still remember the man in the mirror? Do I still make people laugh? Do I still think? Do I still have an anxiety? Or do I even exist? Or am I floating around in my thoughts, working my 9-to-5 job? Or am I on a private island connecting to old family members and new friends? Well, that answer is found in the land of tomorrow. Tomorrow can be as soon as Monday or as far as next year. But today, I'm going to sleep knowing that I wrote to my favorite person.
How many tears do you hold back before your eyes become dried riverbeds with memories of stability and movement? I can beg and beg for a release, for a drop that will not drop. I learn the meaning of thirst. And I ask for an out, but not even the force of water could carry me to a different place with solid ground. The ground no longer exists. I've been trying to find some footing, but it seems I've been floating for the past 8 years. I'd like to think I look like a balloon. Just a little pop of color in the sky. Some days I find myself wishing that at least my sadness was pretty in spite of the pain. But deep down I know I am microscopic. I am just a speck of dust at the mercy of the winds. And the scars on my body are not beautiful. They are a reminder that there is no such thing as a damsel in distress. Until when saviors don't exist, until I dig mine out of the hole in my heart that was reserved for me. But I have not been found in 20 years. I lead my futile search party in the sky. And maybe by some miracle I find myself in shining armor again. Or maybe I remain a speck in the wind.
All right, judges. 3, 2, 1. Get it right, get it right, get it right.
Back in the mail, it's gone. See, like I smell cologne.
Got it. Alright. Next up to the stage, we have Marvel. Marvel, can you bring it up to the stage?
Things I want to say to you, but can't because you blocked me on everything. One. Why? Two. Why or you were too white for me anyway. Three. I or you at least $40 for that Nike sweater, although my guess were better. You know, that thing from Pink you said you really liked, plus a bunch of other things I bought despite the price. Too bad we had our falling out before I ever got the chance to give them to you. Four, you know a little too much about me. And now that we're not on speaking terms, I might just have to kill you. Five, I lied when I said I didn't feel anything when we first kissed. I think you had something stuck in your teeth. Six, I still think about it 2 a.m. FaceTimes. Your name, Francis, went into my brain. Time, I'm on the subway, and you don't even live by paper anymore, so I'm just going to say it. I miss you. But don't get it twisted. Not enough to do anything about it. Sorry, not enough to do anything about it. Seven, except to take 10 minutes of my day to write the poem about you. You're welcome. Eight, when you finally realize that we were both in the wrong, let's have a conversation. Nine, maybe you already realized. Maybe you don't want to have a conversation. Maybe you're just too proud to say I'm sorry. Maybe you're still upset because I was often way too proud to say I'm sorry. Ten, I'm sorry. But since I heard you were talking to my friends here today. 11. For one reason and one reason only, because they all had bad intentions. Thank you.
I need another dose of your magic. Last time you underprescribed me, last time was my first sorcery lesson. No, last time was like the first time I've been to Disney World. Okay, admittedly, I haven't been to Disney World, but I know it's magical. Of all the things I say that I admire, I didn't think someone would say it's you that I desire. Shining, shimmering, splendid was all I could see when a whole new world was opened up to me. But now, because of circumstances, I can't have it. Can only dream of Aladdin's and Jasmine's. Genies can't grant wishes like dragons do. Shenron will help you make your dreams come true, but at least you could see him again. Those three wishes have a cost, you know. At least you won't charge me for a carpet ride. I need another dose of your magic. The spell is wearing out. It's been too long since I've been enchanted. I don't know how big of a dose I need. Just give me a consistent prescription. Dr. Seuss is getting loose on whatever's in cat's hats addiction. The hair tangled in Rapunzel's hairbrush has been proven addictive. Feels like I'm locked away in a tower, awaiting true love's kiss, though I'm not sure it exists. And after sunset, the ogre emerges, and I'm not sure if I can handle these physical urges. More of a curse than enchantment. Dark magic and phantoms, dungeons and dragons. It doesn't matter how much luck or creativity I have. I can't find another potion that's as potent as your devotion. And I need another dose of your magic. And I'm willing to sacrifice my voice so I can gain legs, leave the ocean, walk on land to you and take your hand and receive it. I will knock on your door until your birthday just to see you build another snowman. Just to see you work your wonders. Just to see you bring life to this cold, lonely world I reside in. It may be a bit too much to ask, but I know the cold never bothered you anyway. And you say I should let it go, but I just keep coming back to the edge of the water. It's calling. Now I know how far I'll go. I need another dose of your magic. But you don't seem to be done dealing with your Prince Charming. But harming harmonies don't appease the animals like they used to. I think they've turned their backs on us. Nature won't lead us towards each other in this light-sucking forest, and I can't find my way because you were my evening star. My moonlit midnights, my knight in shining armor, no breastplate, just chainmail, no broadsword, just love and care, no coat of arms, just open arms that understand, cause you've been there, no ending of a fairy tale, no happily ever after, just temporary satisfaction, that's what we were after, and I'm the only one regretting it. You're probably never betting that your hocus pocuses would have me so focused. List no focal point to give, so I can't point out bogusness. Can't tell what's real from illusion. You've hypnotized me with the end of your wand, left me at the edge of my chair, and now I see mirages of your oasis everywhere. Hallucinating when you're a damsel in distress is no fun. Shrooms fill up the room. I'd rather not feel anything if I can't feel you beside me. I need another dose of your magic. But often when you reuse spells, their effects tend to not be as strong or last as long. Indeed, I need another dose of your magic. But you seem to have run out of my fixer elixir. The crystals in my nerves can't absorb all of your wonders like they used to.
The first time I wrote a love poem for a girl, I was 8 years old. I blended pronouns together like messy alphabet soup, not understanding that she and he were not meant to be interchanged in elementary school classrooms. That the idea of soft pink lips was to be saved for preteen boys in summertime, and my hands were not meant to fumble cotton skirts. My teacher kept me inside for 3 recesses. She said, girls do not write love poems for other girls. She told me I did not understand the weight of my words, cut me open. Replaced my heart with labels, kept my sexuality under lock and key, and put my body in the closet, so I began to write poems in pencil. In case I might start to romanticize for even a second what it might feel like if she would look at me longer than she looks at Mark, or Josh, or Steven, I kept femme love poems in a box under my bed. It was the only place I could continue comparing her smile to sunset, call her eyes ethereal, and her morning voice Mozart in school. I handed in poems about the way his blonde hair sparkled in the sun, but I never meant a word of it. I was 13 when I took up acting. Figured I was good enough at it all throughout middle school, bent the straight lines at parties, but never let them snap, let my words tangle themselves in the mouths of boys all throughout high school, learned that this kind of love can be lethal, so I drowned the butterflies she gave me with thoughts of him. Dated the head of the drama club and the school band, never looked twice at the girl on my poetry team. Guess I kept my body in elementary school closets for 10 more years. Not because I wanted to, but because it felt a little safer. You see, my high school had a positive space club. Didn't feel so safe when posters got defaced, though, so I sat and I listened to girls read love poems about other girls, and I wondered when that might finally be me, when I could kiss her in hallways and under street lamps and not be afraid, just like in all our favorite movies. I'm 17 years old and I dig myself out of the closet. Try on truth like an old jacket. Not sure if it would still fit, but it did, so I threw all of my pencils. Picked up a pen, wrote a eulogy to my heterosexuality, and then filled notebooks cover to cover with poems about all the girls that ever made my head spin. I am 20 years old when I realize the weight of my words only becomes heavy when I am telling someone else's story. It looks like understanding now that mine interchanges she and he whenever I feel it necessary, and that sometimes love is messy. Just like alphabet soup.
The art of writing rhyme, tune, division, connection with connecting the pieces together, making a new picture. What I write, I choose who it descends to the ears of whom I choose it to hear. I write to let it simmer in the depths of people's minds, to let them know that the deception of me goes beyond blind eye. I write to speak truth, may it burn sometimes, beauty is pain. People will hate me, love me, try and overtalk me. It's why I write to overtop them with the intelligent intellect, my overpowering writing brilliance that no one ever expected, because who the hell writes anymore? Old school! When I write, it's not to please the people of whispering sweet lies to them, disguising it as sweet nothings. I write the loud truth. I write the language so few are fluent in now. All we use its beautiful words for is TikTok song lyrics and F-bombs. We lost all creative influence. I write for those minds who still have hope for the dear future, that the kids in 2050 will know what a pencil is, let alone the unique movement of the stroke of a pencil mark when lead meets paper. To be making a mark is something forgotten, so I write so the flame will never be seen.